My friends, Mary spent 7 or 8 years working on this incredible book on Padre Pio, offering it all for her sins, for the souls in purgatory. We're going to start talking about that specifically. Mary, please share with us, what are some beautiful stories relating Padre Pio and the souls in purgatory that maybe many people don't know about, but that we should know about?
Well, Padre Pio, here, it's a picture of him here on the cover of the book. He's an Italian friar, and he drew an awful lot of people to him. And he used to say that more souls of the dead go to my mass than the souls of the living. And if you think about that, that's incredible, because
that's amazing.
Yeah, because his mass was absolutely packed. And he had experiences with the souls in purgatory that confirm our faith. Because once a friar asked him, how does the fire of this world compare with the fires in purgatory? And Pio said, they compare as fresh water compares to boiling water. So the fire of this world is just the fresh water, and the fire of purgatory is the boiling water. And if we think about that, then they have to go through this purgation, and it confirms everything that we've been told about our holy Catholic faith is true. And that's what I love about Padre Pio, because everything about Padre Pio is totally Catholic. It totally confirms what we know and hold true in the Apostles' Creed.
I think something beautiful there is, for some people, they love their Catholic faith, and this helps them to kind of reaffirm it. But maybe for others, there's that sense of like, oh, this is stuff that we used to believe, but we don't believe anymore. And since he's, you know, a saint within the last, he died, I think, like in the 60s. It's as if he's saying, hey, what they've been saying this whole time, it's still true. It hasn't changed.
It hasn't changed. And actually, in fact, in this age of mercy, the holy souls in purgatory have never been so forgotten. And we need to bear that in mind, and we need to pray and offer. And I'm just going to say this up front. Everyone out there, think about taking the heroic vow. Everyone out there, think about offering up what you go through on a daily basis for our dead, for our beloved, and for those who are in purgatory. And, you know, Alvaro, when I was working on the book, something that made it sweet was that I said, even if it doesn't get published, because you're always taking a big chance when you're writing a book of that, of this nature. I mean, I honestly felt it was beyond me. And something that made it sweet was that could just offer it for the souls, offer it for those who are in the purgation. And then when we meet them, we'll meet them in heaven, please Jesus, if I make the cut, as I often, Alvaro, I'm not very sure of my own salvation most of the time, but we will meet them. And Padre Pio had many souls who came to him. And he said that Padre Pio used to say that so many souls of the dead come to me, they don't frighten me anymore.
Wow. What was his favorite way of, when he would see them or they would come to him, what was his favorite way to intercede for them? What were some of the ways that he did that?
Well, he would offer Holy Mass for them. And when he was a young priest during World War II, it was a very heavy winter, and it was a very, very cold winter. And once him and the friars were seated around a fire at night trying to warm themselves, and the friary was completely locked up, and suddenly a man appeared alongside the friars, dressed as in an old-fashioned peasant's cloak. Mm-hmm. And he said to Padre Pio, I died in September 1908, and I'm still in purgatory, and I need you to offer a holy mass for me so that I can escape the purgatory flames. And Padre Pio said, I'll offer a holy mass for you the next day. And that's the way he would intercede for the holy souls in purgatory. He would offer a holy mass for them. And that man then was released from purgatory. But it frightened Padre Pio, because in actual fact, Padre Pio was not disquieted, but he was actually very surprised by his own mystical gifts. As he used to say, I'm a mystery to myself. And he walked the man to the front door, and he found that the door had been bolted the whole time. And he was confused as to how the man had got in. And then he realized it was a soul in purgatory.
Yeah, I'm sure that even someone with a holiness like him, these things, it may maybe takes a while to get used to it.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And I mean, when I was working on the book, I had a visit from a soul in purgatory.
What was that like?
Well, she was just a lovely lady. I had spent 2 years working on it. The first draft, it took three drafts. Alvaro, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not sure how I survived writing that book, but I did. She was just there, and she said that she only had a small bit left to go in purgatory, and she blessed me and said, "I'm praying for you." And I didn't think the book was going to come to anything, but she said to me, "I'm blessing you, I'm praying for you." And then I found out later, she just appeared as a lovely lady and she had a little bit more to go in purgatory. And then I found out later that she had had a private ministry. She had had part of Padre Pio's beard. She had part of his whiskers.
Yeah.
And she would go and visit people who were oppressed and she would bless them with his whiskers.
Wow.
And I found that out later and I didn't know that at the time.
How did you find out who she was? So she was basically like, was she a spiritual daughter of Padre Pio?
She was a spiritual daughter of Padre Pio. And this was a few years ago, because I 8 years working on the book. The first 2 years was the first draft of the book. And then I realized, okay, this is a bit bigger than I actually thought it was going to be. I'm going to have to rewrite it. And I wasn't going to just, how does one say? So it was just, she was just there. I thought of her just as a neighbor. In the same way that a neighbor would knock on your door, the soul in purgatory was just there alongside me. And I just thought she was a lovely lady and she was graduating in holiness through purgatory.
Yeah.
And then I found out later that someone said to me, she had a very big devotion to Padre Pio. And I didn't know this at the time that she appeared to me. And she said, "I bless you and I'm praying for you." And that she had brought parts of his beard to people who were spiritually oppressed and being attacked by the devil. And they got a deliverance by way of the relic. And she was devoted to Padre Pio, especially, I think, in the 80s and 90s before he was a canonized saint.
Okay. Wow, that's beautiful. When I was looking through the book, there's so many things to talk about. One of the things that just jumped out at me was a section of some of his prophecies of the future. You know, it seems as if, you know, some of those haven't even been opened because of how the world that react. Maybe can you share some of that?
Yes. So Padre Pio died in 1968, and he had a book of prophecies that are housed in his friary in Italy still. And this takes humility. What I'm about to say, everyone here, some people have reacted very badly when I've shared this with them, but he said that Russia will have a very, very swift conversion to Catholicism and that the United States will have to learn a lesson from the Russians in how to be Catholic. And that's it completely aligns with what Our Lady of Fatima said at Fatima, that Russia will be converted and in the end my Immaculate Heart will triumph. And that's why, it's because of that prophecy, that's why I devoted the book to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, right, and to Padre Pio's mom in particular. You know, her sacrifices to make him a priest were, I'm not sure I could do that. I'm not sure I could make the sacrifices that Padre Pio's mom, Giuseppa, made for him.
That sort of a book of his prophecies, is that the type of thing that they've only released some of them, or are there others? Is that something that's easy to find? How do you have access to that?
Well, we know from the Book of Prophecies, we only have a handful of them. We know about Russia, and he said that the conversion of the United States would be slow but sure. And we only have a few of them because we know that they will be given up entirely. The prophecies will have come true 100 years after Padre Pio's death, which will be in 2068.
Okay.
We know that they will, but they, apparently the world would find them too shocking.
Yeah.
The prophecies. But we do know a few of them, and this relates exactly to everyone who's watching this. Padre Pio wanted all Americans as his spiritual children. And anyone who's watching this as an American, you may become a spiritual child. Padre Pio has already asked the Lord for that grace.
Oh. How did you come to meet him? Is that something, I mean, maybe not to ask an obvious question, but do you consider yourself a spiritual child of Padre Pio? And if so, how did that happen?
Well, again, Alvaro, I think the biggest miracle of Padre Pio in my own life is my own conversion. So someone just explained to me, I was only 14, and someone explained to me Padre Pio could bilocate. The minute someone explained that to me, I had a vision of Padre Pio right there in front of me. And I was in his cell in San Giovanni Rotunda. We were together. He wasn't very happy with me. Again, I was 14. I was a typical teenager, but planning to be totally away from the faith. Like, just, planning to just totally jettison the faith, planning to change my name from Mary, which is my given name. And, you know, he was just there in front of me. We were there in the cell together. And he said to me, I am waiting for you. And for a while, that kind of seemed to me to be a bit ridiculous. Like, why would a great saint in heaven be waiting for me? You know, I mean, I hate to say it, but I was going to go the way of all flesh, Alvaro.
Did your conversion happen in that moment? Because you would think that it would, but you know, when you're a 14-year-old, you can see some pretty incredible things and just write it off.
I did. I wrote it off. I have to be frank that I thought it was just imagination. Wow. But then it just became, everything about it was just so crystal clear. All the details were just perfect. I was confused that he was a Franciscan friar. I knew he was a Franciscan friar, but he was wearing these brown gloves. I was very confused by that. Like, why would he be wearing these brown gloves?
Yeah.
And then I know that he had the stigmata, I learned later. There was just, the apparition was just too perfect, and I couldn't doubt it anymore. And, you know, this great love he had for me.
Wow. Then how long after that did the conversion take place? Was it like a year or so later?
No, it took a while, Alvaro. It took a number of years. So he is a long time. He's been very, 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 very patient with me. I'm a wild Irish girl. And if Padre Pio, I'm wild as wild as wild.
So I would think you get the grace to, I don't know if you could say that you had a vision of San Giovanni Rotondo. You get to meet Padre Pio, and that's not enough for you. Oh my gosh, what was enough for you?
Alvaro, that's the $64 million question. I mean, I get asked all the time about the miracle stories, and I can hold forth on them. I mean, I wrote a whole book, but my own conversion, Alvaro, my own conversion is, how does one say, the biggest miracle of all.
Yeah.
On my soul, the biggest miracle of all is my own conversion to the faith, because I was so far gone. It was not funny. Seriously, at 14, I was very, very, very far gone. Sorry, it's the truth. And that's why I've instructed my loved ones, if I die, they're to pray, they're to sing Amazing Grace at my wake. You know, an Irish wake, they're going to have an Irish wake, an Amazing Grace, because I see myself in the absolute worst sinner. I mean, I'm serious. Yeah. I've done a lot of pro-life work, and, you know, it was good in a way. I think that the Lord had his means for bringing me, you know, because I've never, ever thought myself in any way better than the people when I was doing a lot of pro-life work with people who were living different lives. I've never seen myself as in any way better. So to get back to your question, Padre Pio appeared to me when I was 14, and I just thought it must be imagination. But then I realized it couldn't have been imagination. I'm waiting for you. I want you to do something for me. You have to do this. Then it was, you know, I got struck by a truck when I was 15, a year later. So I had a very, very serious accident, but I came away without a scar, without even a bruise. Because then I had a near-death experience. I didn't know that it was a near-death experience when I was having it, but I was taken into the heavens, and the Lord said to me, you know, I'm returning you to earth, and you're going to be returned without a bruise. That was the part for me where I knew that Jesus was genuine, and I knew it was real, because I'd been struck by a truck. I mean, how does one say, I felt like the body was like a plate that was just suddenly smashed.
Wow.
And I got returned to Earth, and I would have had no medical qualification to know that I was going to be returned to Earth without a scratch.
Yeah. Did you convert then?
I converted at that moment. There was a certainty. I knew that Christ was real, but yeah. I had a very, very confused childhood where, you know, Ireland was really throwing away the faith. And, you know, I was bullied very badly for having the name Mary. So that's why I wanted to change my name.
Wow. You know, for anyone listening to the at this point, some of these things that Mary is saying are difficult to believe, but I've met a lot of Irish people, and I don't know what it is about them, but they have these types of experiences. So this is par for the course if you're Irish. My theory is that it's all the all those Irish people that refused to become Protestant at the time of the famine. And they think of it as, you know, so it's like a million people essentially were martyrs. So all that blood is just, and there's not a lot of Irish people. So that's a lot of blood for all these Irish people that is, God has granted them a lot of these gifts and experiences, you know, so if you're hearing this, that's why I believe you were given these graces because of your ancestors.
Oh, I believe that firmly. And I mean, O'Regan, that's my last name. And that is the Catholic version of Reagan. And I don't think any the less, people always ask me, you know, why is Reagan different? Reagan is the Protestant of O'Regan. And that means that they took, okay, this is controversial, but Reagan means that they took the soup. So Protestants, if you left the faith and became Protestant, you would be fed the soup.
Yeah.
And O'Regan means that you remained Catholic.
Wow. So then you have this near-death experience, you have this conversion experience. When did you kind of reconnect with Padre Pio and began sort of being his spiritual daughter?
Well, I have to say that I was very slow and stubborn, very slow and stubborn. And it was 2 years exactly after what happened when I was struck by the truck that he appeared to me again. And this time, after being struck by the truck, after giving my life to Christ, I was still negotiating. Alvaro, I still wanted things my own way. You know, I'm going to date this boy. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Lord, I know you might have a plan for me, but I have my own plan. Again, very slow, very stubborn, very sinful. But he appeared to me again when I was 17. And he appeared as a glorified being. All I can say is that he was just unbelievably gorgeous. I can't even put into words how he was.
Wow.
To say that Padre Pio was beautiful is a diminishment of kind, because he was just unbelievably beautiful. And he said to me, I love you. He told me how much he loved me and that he was my spiritual father and he was going to care for me. And I was a bit bowled over. I didn't know what was I to make of this. Again, he appeared as a glorified saint. And it was in stark contrast to the first time he'd appeared to me when he was glowering and he was a bit angry. I can understand why now.
Yeah. In all this, did you bring these experiences to your family, to a priest? Who did you share these with?
I have to be very frank with you. I didn't share them with anyone. I kept them to myself because.
I could understand why someone would keep these extremely private, because you don't want people to make all types, you know, to think you're crazy, et cetera, to bring on more persecution on yourself, more difficulties.
Well, I have to be frank with you that people were very surprised that after I was struck by the truck, instead of getting a bruise, there was a light came off the body.
Yeah.
The two doctors, when you've been struck by a truck, when you've been in a very serious accident where people think you're dead, everyone at the scene, there was all these people around, they all thought I was dead. And one woman thought I'd committed suicide. I hadn't. I had walked into traffic. And I was struck by a truck. And the doctors who were both sides of the two doctors came and they take off the clothes or whatever, but a light came off the body.
Wow.
A light. There was like a white light came off my body. And the doctors just say, this is a freak, what on earth? And then they ask the witnesses, really, was she struck by a truck? They couldn't believe it. And that's the thing. Like, sometimes you get a paper cut, or you graze your knee, and you know, something on something simple. I was struck by a truck, and I think the Lord needed to do that to me in order for me to come to faith, Alvaro. Sometimes it's not so much special as special needs. The Lord needed to do that.
Yeah.
But I had a very severely autistic brother. He's very severely autistic. He's nonverbal, and who also has depression issues. So I knew a lot about psychiatric services. And I used to spend a lot of time in the psychiatrist's office with my brother. So I knew that people who heard things were sometimes sent to the psych ward. So I was having various mystical experiences from a young age, with souls in purgatory, with the demons from the time I was a very small child. And I learned, you better keep these things to yourself, or you could get sent to the psych ward. So yeah. Being struck by a truck, the two apparitions of Padre Pio, 14 and then 17, at age 14 and 17, I kept that to myself until I was an established journalist in London.
Wow. Wow. That must not be easy to carry that around, because, you know, it's, you're developing friendships and relationships, and yet, you know, the most intimate part of you, you can't talk about it with anyone. And it's like you're having to be two different people. I could imagine that's not easy.
It's, and part of me needed a lot of discernment. So the first apparition of Padre Pio, I see him totally as he is here, just like yeah. he is there. And I needed to discern and learn an awful lot before I could understand how he was, in particular the brown gloves. I didn't understand. I thought that must be imagination. Like, why would he be wearing these brown gloves?
Yeah.
Then I found out about the stigmata.
Yeah.
And that he wore the gloves.
So then later in your life, you go into journalism. Where did you work?
I worked for the Catholic Herald in London. So I started, when I was a teenager, I started working for the various small religious press in Ireland. But when I was a teenager and working as a journalist, I actually didn't use my own name. I had to write under different pen names because there was a concern in Ireland that I wouldn't be given my degree if I wrote under my own name. Because mm-hmm. Ireland has just gone so far away from the faith.
I see. So you didn't want to write essentially like using your own name about like devout Catholic topics, because then people would like, I don't know what the expression would be, you know, would put you on the blacklist or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then you went to work in London.
Yes. So I went to work in London, and I did a lot of pro-life work. Used to be outside the clinics a lot. Clinics, abortuaries, really. I used to be outside yeah. the clinics trying to dissuade women from having the abortion. And that's where I really saw Padre Pio's intercession.
Yeah.
In helping women decide not to abort and have the baby.
Wow.
I saw his intercession there so much. And that's where I really became devoted to him as a saint, that I knew that he was very powerful before the throne of God.
Wow. That's beautiful. Then you start growing in your relationship with him. You're, so to speak, you know, discipleship of him, and then growing in your journalistic skills. When does the idea grow of writing this book?
Well, what happened was is that I was doing a lot of pro-life work, and I was in my mid-20s, and I came back to Ireland, and I wanted to meet Donal Enright. And he was someone who had been, he was a humble man. Donal Enright was just, he was as Irish can be. And he had these big blue eyes. And someone said to me, you know, you should meet Donal Enright. I was being tested at the time for a very serious illness. And no one knew about this. I didn't want to worry anyone that I was being tested for this illness. And someone said, you know, you should go to visit Donal Enright. He has the glove of Padre Pio. He can bless you with it. So I got in touch with Donal Enright, and I said, Donal, may I come over and visit you? Donal said, yes. Donal had been a disciple of Padre Pio. And he had done a lot of what we call the hard cases. And he looked at me and he said to me, "Ah, you're being tested for this illness." Alvaro, only me and my doctor knew about that. And he knew that you're being tested for this illness. He took the glove. He said, I'm placing this on you now. Illness disappeared.
How did he have that glove?
Padre Pio gave it to him. He was a very, very devoted disciple of Padre Pio, and he used to go to San Giovanni Rotondo many, many times during the 1960s. And Padre Pio used to give him sort of the hard cases. Some people people who were post-abortion, men who were cheating on their wives, the drug addicted.
Yeah.
And Padre Pio used to say, you know, Donal look after them, and Donal would befriend them, and they would walk on this journey with Donal. Sometimes they were very upset with Padre Pio after what he had said to them. Yeah. You know, he refused absolution to a few people who didn't have the firm purpose of amendment, and Donal would then shepherd them and befriend them and teach them the faith. Things that Padre Pio was not able to do because he was in the confessional. And sorry, I must just have a little drink of water. So getting back to, I went to visit Donal Enright. Mm-hmm. I was 26 at the time. And Donal said to me, "Oh, you're going to write something about Padre Pio. You're going to use your pen to make him better known." And I was like, "Oh, no." I was very, very ambitious at the time and thinking, no, I don't think so. And Donal just kept telling me, "You're going to need this and you're going to need that." And every single thing that Donal told me was like the missing piece in the jigsaw puzzle. Wow. For different things about Padre Pio. So, you know, he didn't refuse people absolution indefinitely. He told them, you know, "You need to develop your firm purpose of amendment, and then I'll give you absolution." So that was the part where I felt that was missing from online, is that, you know, were these people meant to walk the earth and then go to God not being absolved? He did always absolve people, but they had to develop the firm purpose of amendment first.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's a powerful thing to do. I mean, very, very few, if any, priests that I'm aware of do these types of things, but it completely makes sense because people can go to confession and not have that proper disposition. And then it doesn't really work like that. You know, you have to be sorry and want to change.
It's true. And I mean, even I feel very convicted by that myself, you know, that I want to go to confession. Padre Pio said that, you know, we really should do weekly confession, because he said the soul is like a room that gets dusty. You know, look at the room hasn't been dusted for a week. That's like the soul.
Were you ever able to go to San Giovanni, to wherever, you know, I don't know if you were shown an actual room in San Giovanni when you had that first apparition? Were you ever able to go there and have that moment where you were like, "Oh my gosh, that's the room"? Anything like that happened?
Well, what happened is that at the time when he first appeared to me when I was 14, I was just suddenly there. I was there in the cell with him, and people were being very careful. People who wanted him to be declared a saint — he hadn't been declared a saint at the time he appeared to me when I was 14. People were being very careful not to disseminate pictures of his cell, because they felt that people would fetishize. And there was that when he was, I mean, you know, in the 1960s, he had to be locked in his cell because people were trying to kidnap him. Yeah. People are actually, monk nap, I call it. People were actually trying to steal Padre Pio.
I can imagine, you know. I would consider it, you know, if I was alive at the time that he was, you know.
I know. So people were being very careful about pictures of his bedroom. So no, I have not actually, to answer your question, I've not actually been in person to San Giovanni Rotondo. Whenever I've had money, I've not had time. And when I've had time, I've not had the money.
Yeah. So perhaps in the future. And then, what was it like to be able to then finish the book? Like, after the 7 or 8 years, when you finally finished, and then I don't know what that process is like, and then the publisher, and then you get your first copy in your hand. What was that like?
Alvaro, I still think that I'm fooling myself. I think that it's an absolute miracle that it was published. And what made it sweet was offering it for the Holy Souls in Purgatory, for my own sins first, and then for Holy Souls in Purgatory. And when I finished it, I remember the day that I finished the last line, and I had this moment of despair. It's going to come to nothing. You know, there was very, very serious attack brought to bear on me.
I can imagine.
By various people around me. You know, two examples. Someone said to me that you're glorifying a self-mutilating psychopath. He's a psychopath. Rupert was a psychopath. He inflicted those wounds on himself. And there was a death threat made by way of my blog. You know, we'll cut you into pieces for what you're doing. That level of death threat. And also someone said that you're like the women who write love letters to the psychopaths on death row. You're like that. I heard that. That was, you know, it's just scarring mentally when you hear those sort of things.
Yeah, and you know, for those listening, I haven't had those types of experiences, but with the YouTube channel that I have, I can imagine these types of things. And when you haven't had those experiences, it could be easy to say, oh, you just ignore them. You just offer them up for the glory of God. And it's not that easy. Those things get in your mind. They affect you, you know, because you care about the things that people, you just do, you care, you're human. So it could be really difficult to hear these types of things.
And I was also stalked by a religious, I'm not going to say if it was a priest or a nun, but there was also a religious who was very upset about the book. And my spiritual director said, you're going to have to cut off contact with this religious because regrettably, just sending very nasty emails that were very undermining.
Yeah.
And, you know, and some of my friends were harassed too by people who were upset about the book.
Yeah.
And that was actually kind of harder in some respects because some people who were very upset about the book and, you know, an ex-boyfriend has been in touch with a friend of mine and giving them grief about the book just in recent weeks.
Yeah. So in some ways in writing the book about Padre Pio, you've been given the chance to kind of live in his shoes or in his sandals, so to speak. Like you've shared in some of the experiences that he had, the persecution that he had, the misunderstanding that he had.
I believe so to a small extent. And I never thought, again, I never ever courted these mystical experiences. I never have asked for them, but they have happened to me. And, you know, there has been that. I mean, he suffered more from his fellow friars he suffered more from his fellow priests. His priests, the other priests persecuted him terribly. And I did have that in the course of writing the book. I did have one religious who regrettably behaved very badly towards me, another religious. And then at the same time, here in California, so I live in Los Angeles, I can only say good things about the priests and nuns here in Los Angeles. I mean, if you're a priest or a nun here in Los Angeles, and you're out there trying to convert souls, you've got to be good. And we have fantastic priests and nuns here on the ground here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, wow.
Fantastic. I mean, really, really, really great priests and nuns here. And they have been nothing but kind to me and loving. And they pray so much and they're so devoted to Padre Pio. Wow. And we've got to reclaim Los Angeles for Christ.
Yeah. And I think that's the type of city that he's the type of saint that I would want to, you know, you'd need that caliber of a saint for a place like Los Angeles, from what I know.
Oh yeah. I mean, on a clear day, we can see Satan's headquarters, AKA Hollywood, you know, just on a clear day, we can see the Hollywood sign over here, AKA Satan's headquarters.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think for everyone listening, you can hear the journey, at least some of the journey that you've been on. You know, we've gotten like a little taste and some of the sufferings that you've been through. I would hope that they would see, okay, there's got to be some fruit that God wants to work through this book and how is the best way for them to find it or for them to get a hold of it?
Well, everyone listening, get on Sophia, Sophia Press, go to the website, and it's Sophia with a PH. So it's S-O-P-H-I-A. And you're going to find an absolute treasure trove of authors on Sophia Press. And you're going to, if you go there looking for Padre Pio, you're going to find an awful lot of authors that are much, much better than me with much better books. And there's even one by our mutual friend, Patrick Ahern, has just come out with one on exorcisms. And he did that with Charles D. Froyne. And we also have Gabe Castillo, and we have Mary Beth Bracey, who's written about Carlo Acutis. Fantastic stuff.
Yeah, absolutely loved Padre Pio, I've learned.
I know, it's extraordinary, and I think he's a very special intercessor. I love Carlo Acutis very, very much. I'm praying to him very, very much.
Well, wonderful. Well, Mary, I think this is a thank you so much for being so generous and sharing some of these things from your life and your experiences. I hope people, after they've read all those other books, you know, or if they want to give your book a humble chance, that they check it out.
Well, I wrote the book also because a lot of people said that they could afford to buy one book on Padre Pio, but they couldn't afford to buy many books on Padre Pio. So I wanted to give everything that I possibly could on Padre Pio in the one volume. And to answer your question about when I finished the book, I said, Lord, if it's going to come to nothing, if it's only going to be, you know, something that's helping me gain some measure of sanctity. I mean, I don't think we work out our salvation through fear and trembling. People say to me, oh, you have a guaranteed place in heaven now that you've done a book on Padre Pio. No. I have to kneel down tomorrow at confession and really convict myself of my sins and say, Lord, please, please, please have mercy on me, a sinner. I've not had the smell of roses and violets because we talked a lot about Padre Pio having the stigmata, and the stigmata had a lovely smell of roses and violets. I've never had that. But when I finished the book, there was an incredible smell of incense. The mystical smell of incense came round here, this little study I have here in Los Angeles. And I had a feeling that God had accepted the offering for the holy souls.
Wow. Beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. Well,
we need to talk about Our Lady of Knock, Alvaro.
Yes.
Yes, because that's actually, I don't want to get all fangirl on you, but your channel is my favorite YouTube channel. I want to congratulate you, and I want to say thank you with all my heart for doing that beautiful video on Our Lady of Knock. I mean, I've watched that so many times, it's not funny. On Our Lady of Knock, Our Lady of Knock appeared in Ireland in the West Coast after the famine.
Yeah, it was, you know, for me, it was, again, such a privilege to be able to do that, to get connected with so many beautiful people in Ireland that if they're watching, they know, you know, so it was, I think it was a gift from Our Lady to me, maybe in the same way that you feel like Padre Pio gave you the gift of writing this book.
I think so. And also, Padre Pio had something to say about Our Lady of Knock, which, as I said, he had an Irish friend, Donal, who used to go to Padre Pio a lot in the 1960s and helped a lot of people who were really struggling in sin. Donal did. But Padre Pio took Donal aside at one stage and said, you are now to be particularly devoted to Our Lady of Knock. Donal was surprised. You know, he'd been helping Padre Pio for a number of years. He was saying countless rosaries every day. There is a graduation, I believe, Alvaro, because Our Lady of Knock appears in... She appears in the west coast of Ireland. It's absolutely raining constantly, and she appears alongside her appears John the Beloved, John the Evangelist, who wrote the book of Revelation. And it's only the very humble who can only the really humble and pious can approach the book of Revelation. And Donal was confused, you know, why am I now to be particularly devoted to Our Lady of Knock? And that's what Padre Pio told him. And I believe that I don't believe that Our Lady of Knock is as well revered in America as she deserves, because she appears to the Irish after the famine. she appears to the Green Mouths. You know, my grandmother used to talk about the Green Mouths. They had been starving and they had eaten the grass. Mm-hmm. And then they died because they had the green. My grandmother used to, she, her grandparents used to tell her about the Green Mouths. Wow. It's very, very real. And even though they had watched their own family die, they the minute Our Lady of Knock appears, it's a silent apparition of Our Lady. They kneel down and they pray the rosary. The minute, that minute. And that actually has to be our deference. Our deference always has to be the Mother of God will do whatever, ever she asks us to do.
Beautiful. Well, Mary, why don't we, let's finish with a prayer for everyone that's listening. We'll invoke Our Lady of Knock. We'll invoke the souls in purgatory and Padre Pio. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Blessed Mother, Our Lady of Knock, we come to you under this title, and we ask you to pray for us in this work, and especially for all those listening, but in a particular way, we offer you this humble prayer for the souls in purgatory right now, those in most need, those from our families, that our friendship with them may grow each and every day. And Padre Pio, we ask you to take us under your fatherhood, your spiritual fatherhood that God has given you, that if it is God's will, that we may become, that we may be and become your spiritual children. Please bless this video and all those who hear it. Whenever this is heard, we ask all this through Christ our Lord.